This is Renegade Broadcasting. Everybody, happy Wednesday, second to the last day of June. Absolutely incredible. Jeez, I can't believe the 4th of July is coming up on Monday. By the way, I'm most likely not going to be doing a show Monday. In fact, yeah, I won't be. I'll be away. Probably most of you will be as well. So just to give you a heads up early on that, yeah, I won't be doing a show Monday. But be back up and running on Tuesday of next week. Anyway, once again, guys, it seems like at least once a week this happens now. I don't know what the hell's going on, where I can't sleep. I just toss and turn. So rather than waste time, I'm not going to be able to sleep anyway. I get up and read, and, well, here I am. No sleep again, so... If I seem to be talking nonsense, or more nonsense than usual, it's because of that reason. No friggin' sleep once again. So bizarre. Some of it might be the weather. We've been having unusually strange monsoon-type downpours that friggin' keep you up. You can't even sleep. Yeah, I'm sure that affects air pressure and everything. That has a lot to do with restlessness, too, I'm sure. Anyway, picking up where we left off yesterday. I wanted to mention thanks to a listener. I mentioned how, you know, there's several books I want to write. One being, you know, on the Bible and the problems therein. And that's kind of been on the back burner for a while. I've been wanting to do it, but on the one hand, I've kind of been putting it off because I just, there's so much material to cover. I don't even see how it's feasible to put it in one volume. I still don't, but nevertheless, you know, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. You got to take that first step. So I finally did. A listener prompted me. She's like, you got to do it. It's time. You know, you put this off too long. So yeah, I did finally, I got about the first 6 pages or so done, which is just the introduction. So anyway, it's finally underway. I don't know how long it's going to take, but, judging by the previous books I've written, probably, well, a good 6 months anyway. Maybe longer, maybe shorter, I don't know. The research is done. It's just putting it together now in a book form. I'm going to use basically, you know, the show notes that I put together over the past several years. But, you know, the research really is only 1/10 of the job anyway. It's the editing. It's not even getting your thoughts on paper either or on the screen. That's not the problem. It's not the research. It's not getting your thoughts down. It's the editing, the reading and rereading and rereading again. That's the real pain in the ass. That's the real time consumer. So, it's going to take a while, but anyway, I'll keep you abreast on that when it's done. I'll let you know. But yeah, this is something that it just needs to be done. Absolutely needs to be done. And yeah, it's going to be a unique book. I've seen a lot of great books out there arguing against the Bible, but none of them are quite so comprehensive as what I'm planning this to be, which is why, once again, I'm kind of leery of it because I know it's going to be pretty lengthy. And, I'd like to do it in one volume, but I don't know. I don't know. It's probably going to be a thick book. Maybe I can make the print font smaller or whatever. Try to keep it down. Maybe I'll have it printed on extra thin Bible type pages. Since it is a Bible exposure book, maybe, it is. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to try to make this as comprehensive as possible, covering every conceivable angle, that I've been talking about for the past several years. It's got to be done. Nobody's ever attacked this damn thing this way that I know of. So by the time I'm done, anybody who reads this book, if you can't see that that thing is just full of shit and not worthy of your belief, your respect, that the book itself, its God, its religion or religions that that thing has spawned, if you can't see after reading this, then please give me your name and address, and I'll recommend a good psychiatrist for you in your area. I'll look it up for you, and maybe. I'm not a fan of drugs, but obviously someone like you will need drugs, so maybe he can recommend some good, powerful drugs that will put you out of your misery and everybody else's too. If you're that brain dead, you're dangerous to your own self as well as those around you. There's no saving that book. There's no saving it. Once you look collectively, not even collectively, you don't even have to do that. Just look at any one of the problems I've been pointing out over the years. But yeah, once you look collectively at all of the problems together, holy horseshit, there's no salvaging the goddamn thing. There is no salvaging the damn thing. Toss it in the scrap heap. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about finally getting this thing underway and getting it finished. Anyway, so yesterday I left off reading a quote from the San Francisco Chronicle back in April of 2008, April 23rd. I read most of the quote, just this final paragraph here that I didn't have time to finish before the show ended yesterday. It went on to say, "You don't have to look very far to understand that human beings, hell, all animals really, adore song and music and tone and rhythm, and then link this everyday source of life straight to the roar of the planet itself and then back out to the cosmos." So again, it was making the point that yes, the Earth vibrates as it rotates. Not only does it give off electromagnetic vibrations, but sound vibrations as it rotates. Once again, like I said, if you haven't heard any of these quote music of the spheres, that NASA has made, pretty much every planet does this, especially the outer planets, the gaseous giants that have very powerful magnetic fields, not audible tones, of course, but vibrations that are converted into audible tones. It's pretty neat. Check it out. Several different recordings have been made. Each one is different, and they're hauntingly beautiful to listen to. Very ominous sounding, very, mysterious. Anyway, here's some additional observations along this same line. There are many interrelationships between heavenly bodies that mimic numerical or mathematical relationships in the music world. So let's look at some examples of this. The revolution period of Mars divided by the revolution period of Earth equals an interval in music called a major seven. So numbers related to music, musical scales, seem to be encoded in the movements of the planets in their orbits and whatnot. It's amazing too that when dividing the two planets' diameters, one gets the same interval, the major seven. So you get this same musical numerical value in both their orbits and in both of these planets' diameters, Mars and Earth. The Mars diameter divided by the Earth's diameter, exactly one half of 1.059, or one half step in music. You know, it's equal to that. So that's again, very interesting stuff. The Bible seems to even hint at this phenomenon in Psalm 19, 1 to 4. And again, I'm not crediting the ancient heebie-jeebies for this. They just stole everything, you know, from surrounding nations. They didn't make this discovery. But anyway, they have never contributed anything of use or value to society, guys. Do you realize that? Never. Very often, you know, you'll hear that, oh yes, they contributed much to you know, to our culture, to many cultures around the world, and they'll cite the Bible. Oh, frickin' please. What the hell kind of contribution is that? But anyway, this passage reads, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night sheweth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun." The heavens, says the psalmist, are singing out the glory of, quote, God. Or you could replace that word with just, you know, the wonders of the cosmos. They're singing out. Seems to imply an awareness of this, again, you know, music of the spheres. Several medieval scientists were fascinated with this concept. Johannes Kepler, for example, talked about the music of the spheres. He believed that the planets did produce notes. Well, they do. We now know they do. I mentioned that yesterday. Went through, you know, each planet talking about the notes that they produce. How they pretty much cover an entire octave, the whole scale. He also believed, which of course isn't true, but he was so into mathematics that he believed that each planet's orbit represented one of the Platonic solids. He endeavored to try to prove that and was never able to do it till his dying day, but he still died believing that that was the case. Well, no, not quite. But nevertheless, he was right in his idea about, again, you know, the music of the spheres. Interestingly enough, some researchers believe that the very act of planetary rotation may be the result of somatics. You know, if you ask most scientists, why do planets rotate? They'll say, to keep them stable in their orbits. Well, yes, rotating planets are stabilized in their orbits as they rotate. Yes, that does have that effect, but that doesn't answer the question, what causes the planets to rotate? That doesn't answer the question at all. In the laboratory, certain vibrations have been observed to cause objects and beads of liquid to continuously rotate in circles. Sound, simply sound waves cause them to rotate. So could it be that this music of the spheres, they all produce, a musical note? Could it be that this music, this vibration creates the rotation action of the planets, and that in doing so, yes, it does keep them stable in their orbits, but the initial movement of rotation itself, could it be that it was spawned by and continues to be driven by the music that they make, if you will, the vibrations that they produce? Very possibly, yes. The hexagon shape at Saturn's north pole may be the result of its vibrations as well, since this same shape has been produced, of course, in the lab through sound vibrations. The hexagon is a common shape produced by vibrations. Could that be what causes this hexagonal shape at Saturn's north pole? I must also point out that J.A. Newland's law of octaves as pertaining to the natural elements. In 1883, this man arranged 37 elements in order according to their atomic weights. He found that the elements fell into a pattern where their properties began to appear or began to repeat themselves every eight spaces. That is, the properties of element eight, for example, were similar to those of element one. Those of element nine were similar to those of element two, eight spaces later, or eight octaves, if you will. Those of, number 10 were similar to those of number three, and so on. He found this to be the case as he went through each element. What's going on with that? There's a correlation, guys. Between the planets and octaves, and between the elements at the atomic level and octaves. Matter and energy are inseparable. They are, in fact, one and the same. As I said, what was it, yesterday or the other day? Matter really is a concentrated form of energy. That's all it is. That's all atoms are. They're just energy. Everything is constantly vibrating, constantly in motion. Anyway, 2 years later, this same scientist, Newlands, expanded his analysis to include all 62 of the then-known elements. He found that the same recurring pattern held true with the new table, especially if he left empty spaces for elements that apparently had not yet been discovered. And indeed, all the elements discovered since fall into this pattern as well. Absolutely fascinating. Let's look at the connection between musical notes and colors. Again, just two different forms of vibrations, and there are correlations between them. There's a direct correlation between the frequencies of the sound vibrations in a musical octave and the vibrations of the colors of the rainbow. First, you have the color of purple red, which actually equals out to an F note. Then you go to the red band, which equals out to an F sharp, to the orange red equaling a G. There's a direct mathematical correspondence. Orange equals out to G sharp, yellow orange to A, and then yellow to B, yellow green to B flat, green to C, turquoise to C sharp, dark blue D, Prussian blue D sharp, and then finally violet E. Very interesting. Notice that there are seven musical notes. A full octave brings us back, of course, to the original note we started at, but one octave higher. And there are seven colors in the rainbow. Those seven colors are only a small portion, of course, of the electromagnetic spectrum, but those are the colors that we see. And there are seven of them. Of what is called white light. White because when you mix them all together, all those different colors of light, they come out white. And so, yeah, there are seven of them, and there's seven musical notes in a scale. Very interesting. The entire electromagnetic spectrum can be divided into octaves, just like sound waves can be, winding up with 81 octaves in the entire electromagnetic spectrum. The EM spectrum of an object is the frequency range of electromagnetic radiation that has wavelengths that range from thousands of kilometers down to fractions of the size of an atom. Theoretically, sound wavelengths have the same range. And just as all objects in the universe emit, reflect, or transmit some light and other forms of EM radiation, so it is with sound waves. Some objects absorb some sound waves while reflecting or transmitting others. So these vibrations, if you will, and that's what they are, light rays and sound waves are vibrations. They respond in very similar ways. They're waves. Visible light ranges from deep red, roughly 700 millimeters, to violet, roughly 400 millimeters. Anyway, the wavelengths of sound frequencies, audible to the human ear, that is, range from 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz, and are between approximately 17 meters and 17 millimeters, respectively. Anyway, as you can see, the wavelengths in audible sound are much longer than those in visible light, but nevertheless, there's interesting correlations between these two types of vibrations. Just like sound can be used for therapeutic purposes, the same is true, of course, with colors, as I said the other day there. Scientists have noted, for example, that red excites people and tends to make them more aggressive. Pink, on the other hand, has a calmative effect. And so People in advertising choose colors specifically that they know are going to attract and hold people's attention. They're not going to use colors that are known to make people passive. They want to make you active. Get you to buy their product. This is why you will see reoccurring colors again and again in similar contexts for a reason. They also choose background music very carefully. They have it down, once again, guys, to a science to maximize their manipulation of you. The human body, of course, and indeed all life forms emit vibrations of radiation and sound of all sorts. The nervous system emits electromagnetic radiation. The heart emits sound and bioelectric waves. The brain, of course, emits waves of its own, alpha, beta, and all of this can be detected down to the cellular level. The human body also emits heat or infrared, which has been captured on film, looking like an aura that surrounds the body. This is done through what is called Krillian photography, a process whereby the body's heat emissions are captured on film. Such emissions can even be captured even after the person has left the area, since the heat emitted by his or her body still remains in residual form for a time in the room. All life is literally teeming with vibrations. Do these vibrations hold the secret to life itself? Is what we call life a form of energies that emanate from the cells of living tissues? And perhaps when we die, it's because the cells cease to vibrate. What keeps us alive is this vibrating energy. Who knows? What exactly is life? There's another enigmatic question for you that nobody can answer. What the hell makes the difference between a living body and a dead corpse? Obviously, the word life would be the answer to that question. But what is life? What is it? What is this energy we call life? And does it cease when we die? Or is it something that continues on? Is it something that pre-existed our birth? Who knows? Who knows? The universe and everything in it is constantly pulsing with vibrations of sound, light, and other EM energies. These vibrations are what enable us to hear and to see, and they're what give all matter form and substance. In fact, technically, not only do vibrations enable us to hear and see, but really all the other senses too, if you come right down to it. The sense of touch involves vibration. We wouldn't even feel matter except certain forms of it vibrate more intensively and thus create the illusion of a solid object, but there's no solidity there at all. The same for smell, same with hearing, seeing, tasting. Yeah, tasting involves vibration. All right, guys, short break, turn back.
In other places, but the horns, they blowing that sound. Kyle Hunt here, host of The Solar Storm, a radio show with lots of interesting guests, unique analysis, important topics, and essential inspiration. You will learn how our world got to this sorry state and how we can work together to fix it, starting down the road to a better future for us and future generations. I know it can seem hopeless sometimes, but the sleeping giant has awoken. Now things are getting interesting. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, right here on Renegade Broadcasting.
Guys, welcome back. So that completes our discussion on somatics, although I'm going to continue on with some related topics. This is something I mentioned the other day that I said I would wait till later to cover, but nah, since we're on the topic and I've been getting a lot of emails about it, I figured I might as well cover it now. Humankind is largely the unwitting victim of a frequency war on our consciousness, folks, that has been waged for decades, if not centuries or millennia. But definitely a change has taken place in the last several decades in the frequency of the music that we hear, you know, on the radio, on TV, on CDs we buy, that is designed to disrupt, to upset our nervous systems. Who knows what harmful effects this is causing, among so many other ways that they're screwing us up with crap in the food, crap in the water, crap in the air, toxic EMF radiation that we're constantly being exposed to with cell phone towers, cell phones themselves, high tension power lines, on and on and on. But this is another aspect to it. The goal has clearly been to keep us as gullible and subservient as possible through multifarious means. Look at the chemtrails. Anyway, some clear examples of this are the toxic slop that they put again, in our food, our drinking water, toothpaste, inoculations, not to mention the constant inundation we receive of, chemtrails on a daily basis. But another way, a rather subtle one, is the standard frequency that popular music has been set to. Most people aren't even aware of this, of course. Let's take a look. In modern history, music has been used as a powerful tool to manipulate the masses. This has obviously been the case with the lyrics of songs, which instill, especially among the youth, attitudes of rebellion and moral depravity. I mean, that doesn't even require elaboration. My God, just look at the degradation that's taken place. Look at the downward trend that's been occurring over the past several decades. Each generation is taken further and further down the rat hole, with the content in songs. Just look at the lyrics. But it's not just the lyrics. There's something else going on. It's, we're not just affected by the words of songs. It's the melody, the tempo, the frequency. The manipulation of music goes much deeper than simply the lyrics, involving, again, the frequency itself and the ability thereof to disrupt and adversely affect normal brain function, as well as the central nervous system. It all began in modern times in 1939, when the tuning of note A above middle C to 440 hertz was adopted as the standard in the music world. Looks like we got a caller on the line here. Welcome to the show, caller.
Hi, Father Charlie.
Hey, what's happening?
50 years since my last confession. First of all, I'm so, yeah, absolutely.
It's going to cost you a lot,
sorry. I'm sure. Well, that was something I wanted to mention about sin. But before I say that, I'm really sorry about to hear about your mom's passing.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, man.
Yo, it was nice hearing you talk about her, because I lost my mom in 73, and when we had the funeral, our family was shocked at the people that were showing up.
Yeah, didn't know same here. I couldn't believe. Yeah.
Yeah, because you think you know this person, and then you find out, you know, wow, the hell, who are all these people? My father was going, who's all these people that know your mom? It's incredible. And it was really nice. It's really nice when you relate the way you relayed your the time with your mom. And you're right. You need to. All of us, we all need to remember to spend time with them when they're older, because they really want to be with us. They think about us an awful lot, and a lot of times they don't want to be a burden.
Yeah, oh, that was my mother. Yeah. Yeah,
they don't. I know I do that with my own kids. I don't want to ever be a burden on them. They have their own life, you know. They're very busy,
right?
You know, and I understand that. But it's always nice to have them. You know, there's nothing like having your children call you up and say, you know, I want to talk to you, Dad, because you're the only sane person I know. I mean, that's a compliment.
Yeah.
you need to have them say, you know, Dad, you were right about everything. You know, I see the point that you tried to make years ago. I didn't want to listen to you. I listened to my friends. I should have listened to you. You know, you want to hear things like that. And that's what our parents always want. They want to hear things. So, and you always remember certain times you had with your mom or your dad that were special. And you got to hold them close for as long as you can get, because life is so short. Like you were saying that other show, it's like it's hell. You know, you see a picture of your mom, you're that age now. You know, we're going to blink our eyes and we're going to go.
Yeah.
But anyway, you were mentioning so something. I enjoy a lot of the shows. There were things you were talking about. I've heard things about it, some of the things. Like they were talking about the walls of Jericho. They tried to, believe it or not, there's things that have been tried. Like science has tried it, but we don't hear about it unless you really look into some of the things. They tried to use sound to try to get it to see how much of a high frequency you would need to cause stone to crumble, and it's such a high sound that if you were in the area, it would blow your the eardrums out,
right,
before it,
right,
knocked down the wall. So there's certain things that you're like, hey, is this just somebody else's story? You know, maybe some of it might have some truth. You know, it's difficult to know. It's fascinating, though. I always like, you know, there's nothing like, you know, reading about these subjects and thinking about what other people, you know, mind now. By the way, there's something about people will say something when it comes to belief, you know, belief in God. They'll say, well, they do it just in case. So, you know, a lot of people question ones. You know. So
cover,
they do it just in case.
Butt.
But here's the problem with trying to cover your butt. We're all human beings, and we all forget things. We all do. So what happens when you did something wrong sometime in your life, which might be considered a sin bad enough to put you in hell, and you forgot about it? Because we human beings do this. So you're holding on to this God. You do know he knows everything, right? He's not going to forgive you because you forgot your sin. You know, he's not going to do that. So you're holding on to this illusion of God. You're better off trying to just realizing that none of this stuff makes any sense. Because if it's true, you're going to hell anyway.
Well, you know, what assurance can you have that he's even going to forgive you when you beg and plead with him in prayer, when you beg and plead with him for everything else and you never get an answer? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but my point is, if you did something wrong and you believe in forgiveness and you never ask for forgiveness,
right, yeah.
You're going to hell.
Yeah.
And what, you know, is there anything that we've ever done and looked back on? And you ever go, oh, I remember when I did that. And, yeah, that would have put me in hell. You know, I'm sure we all have done things. And
you confessed all your sins except when you stole that 5-cent candy bar from the corner store when you were a kid. Get out.
You know, you know how, and how I remember the first time that I ever thought about taking something. It was when I was in a store with my mom. There was a bag of candy corn that somebody had opened up in a store. And I must have been maybe 5 years old, and I loved candy corn. And I saw it open, and I took one kernel, and I put it in my hand, and all of a sudden I felt this pain in my heart. Because now I'm thinking about stealing and eating this one candy corn in an open bag that they're going to throw away anyway.
Vinny, I'm shocked and appalled. I must say.
Yeah, but I remember what I felt like. Like, I'm thinking, is God looking at me now? Maybe if I get around, go around this corner and get into this next aisle, he won't see me behind this shelf, you know, and just to eat a piece of candy corn.
How
ridiculous the feeling was.
You know, the whole damn mess.
Yeah, it's so insane. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a good. You have a great show as always. When are you going to do the next religious rant?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That, well, as soon as I finish this rant, which will probably last.
And another thing. There was something else I wanted to say. We talk about all these terror drills, and we know they're all fake. And here's the problem: the people that. Other people we know, we go about it the wrong way. We can't, you know, from 9/11, you can't try to talk to people because they don't understand your position the way you see things.
Yeah.
So what I try to do, and I found that this is a little easier to do, is you might want to try it, and the people that listen in might try it.
Perform a lobotomy first?
What I do is I'll say to them, you do realize that the war on terror is complete BS. And a lot of people will look at you and they'll either partially agree, and I'll say, you know why it's but BS.
Wide open borders.
Wide open borders, but not only that. During World War II, when Germany went into France, they knew they could never control that country because the French did everything in their power to mess with the German army. I mean, you know, they were saboteurs. They did everything possible. So I was telling I tell people, if there was really terrorism in the United States, I mean, you'd have forest fires everywhere. You'd have train derailments everywhere. I says any large building, whether it's a government building or just a private institution, I said they could go in the basement and break a couple of gas pipes and walk out of the building, and it's going to go up in a half an hour. So there's so many things that if there really was terrorism, it would happen. And people, when I say that, they do look at me as though they've never thought of it, you know, never thought of it in a logical way. I said, so if you don't, if you think the French did this to the Germans, and the Germans knew they could never, you know, what are you going to do? They hate us eternally.
Yeah.
So and you know what happened during World War II? So the first thing is we put Japanese into concentration camps. And by the way, a lot of Germans who sympathized with Germany They put him in prison. I said, so we went to war, and we brought millions of people from these, the Muslims from these countries. You don't think that if this was all real, if they actually were the ones that did 9/11, that they would not commit all these atrocities in this country? I said, but it doesn't happen. Nowhere.
Mm.
You know, things that I just said would be happening all the time.
Right.
You know, they, it wouldn't be somebody saying that they're a member of ISIS and they shot a bunch of gay people in the bar. Mm-hmm. You know, they would do what I said. They would, every time there was a problem or there was no rain for a couple of weeks, they'd be setting forest fires all over the country. They would do it. They'd derail. They wouldn't be able to. There would be no train. You know, every train would be derailed.
Yeah,
they could never. Never stop terrorism. You can't do that.
Yeah.
So you have to get them to the realization that they've been duped that way, and then they may be able to consider something else. But if you don't get to that first point where they have to question that concept and idea of terrorism, you're not going to get anywhere. So anyway, it seems to work a little better once you get them over that hump of thinking about that.
Right.
But other than that, one other show that you did, I remember one of your favorite shows that you ever did in the past was one of the first ones I ever heard you, when you talked about all the people who tried to get rid of the private banks and all the people that were killed because you talked about the presidents and all. That was a really good show. That one's worth repeating because a lot of people don't know about that.
Yeah,
you know, they don't know how many times, you know, they don't know about the War of 1812 and what that was really involved about, you know, what that was all about. But anyway, keep up the good work, Charlie. You're doing a great job.
All right, man. Appreciate the call.
Take care, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot, buddy. Take care. Yeah, that is a good show. I got to repeat. There's quite a few shows I want to repeat from many moons ago. The whole Egyptian series, ancient Egyptian series, absolutely fascinating stuff. Anyway, Vinny was just mentioning, I'm not even sure if I mentioned this aspect of it, but talking about my mother's funeral and all the people that came. There was one woman that was a fellow student with her, you know, in high school. And I remember now, I saw her name in the guest book, and I remember now hearing my mother mention her a few times in the past years ago. I guess they were really good friends. Anyway, I didn't know this, though, you know, struck up a conversation with her, and she was talking about how my mother was the top in the class. She says she was a very brilliant student and extremely talented. She was the top, class pianist. I didn't know any of this. I had no idea that she was fluent in French and German, was considering, being a translator. But then she got married and that was the end of all that. My mother never, ever even touched a piano. I never saw her go near one. And yet she was the top, class pianist. She used to play all over town. I had no idea. She was never one to talk about herself, to brag about herself or, to draw attention to herself or anything. And yet all these years, I can't believe it. It's not until after she passed away that I started finding this stuff out. No wonder I did so good in Greek. I think I inherited all that from her. How do you like that? She even modeled for a shoe company at one point. I didn't know any of this stuff. Anyway, pretty interesting. As I said to several people in emails, I have to attribute to her all of my good qualities, although I am only a crude carbon copy. But definitely, all of my good character traits definitely came from her. They didn't come from my father. Anyway, back to our notes here. As I was saying, in 1939, the world standard for music switched to an A above middle C, 440 hertz. In 1910, an earlier push to effect the same change was met with limited success. But nearly three decades later, the British Standards Institute, or BSI, adopted the A equals 440 hertz standard following staunch promotion by, guess who, the Rockefeller Consortium. At a precise time that World War II preparations were being finalized by the petrochemical pharmaceutical war financiers, this was the year that A440 became the international standard. The American Federation of Musicians had already accepted the A440 as standard pitch in 1917, and the U.S. government followed suit in 1920. It's interesting to note that in October of 1953, despite the British push for the arbitrary A440 standard, a referendum of 23,000 French musicians voted overwhelmingly in favor of A equals 432 hertz, a more natural, soothing frequency. They didn't want the 440 thing because it's not a natural, soothing frequency. Why would they push for this 440 when it's not natural, it's not soothing? Because, again, they know it would be an irritant. And they're all about that, aren't they? Once again, guys, another example of how technology has been used against man, against society, instead of in man's interests. This works across the board, ladies and gentlemen. All the crap additives they put in our food, it's not bad oversight, bad judgment. It's by design. They meticulously researched these chemicals so that their negative effects would be in the immediate present, you know, almost non-detectable, so that no one would make the connection. It takes sometimes years for the effects of these poisons to do their dirty work, by which time, nobody knows, nobody recognizes it. In fact, we take so many poisons into our system, you can't even narrow it down half the time. And because mainstream medical mafia pundits, for the most part anyway, aren't pointing any fingers in that direction, most people never suspect it. It's a mystery why cancer rates are so high in this country. It's a mystery why we have the highest rates of stroke and heart attack in this country. Mystery, mystery, mystery. It's almost all diet, ladies and gentlemen. Even when you have a propensity for certain diseases because it's in your family, your family tree, it doesn't mean you have to contract that disease. Very often, diet, exercise, can alleviate that. You might have to work harder at it than other people that don't have it in their genes, but nevertheless, it doesn't have to wind up that way. So a lot of times it's not even genetics. It is simply frickin' diet. The crap they're putting in our foods is designed to give us frickin' cancer, heart attack, stroke. America, it's no coincidence, guys. It's no unforeseen coincidence. It's by design that America happens to have all of these horrific diseases out of control, epidemic proportions, and yet at the same time, we have the highest percentage of highest usage of all these toxic food additives. I love eating at foreign restaurants, not only because I love different ethnic foods taste-wise, but my God, they're so much more healthy. Indian food, Thai food, The ones that aren't Americanized, like Chinese, forget it. You know, unless you can find in your local Chinatown a real authentic Chinese restaurant. Although I advise you to be extremely cautious there too, because you might be eating fish eyeballs or something. But you know, generally Chinese food, not the scary stuff, but you know, real Chinese food is a hell of a lot more healthy than American food. Not the Americanized Chinese food, which is like 99% of the Chinese restaurants out there. Stay the hell away from those, god damn it. Amongst other things, they're loaded with MSG. It's because of the toxic American influence. But when you eat at a real, authentic foreign restaurant, you're going to be eating a hell of a lot more healthy food than anything you'll get in any goddamn American restaurant. Unless it's an old-fashioned, locally run, mamas and papas type place, you know, family recipes. Those are good. But they're pretty rare, aren't they? They've been driven out by the frickin' multi-billion dollar corporate food chains, food chain restaurants. I hate them all. I can't frickin' stand them. The Pub 99s and the Fuddruckers or the Rudfuckers or whatever the hell. Or the Applebee's. Screw all that crap. My God, they're just glorified frickin' McDonald's is all they are. Holy horseshit. Stay the hell away from that crap as much as you can. I'd advise you don't eat there at all. But if you can't avoid it, god damn it, order a salad or something. And by the way, ask for the salad without the croutons. And, you know, get some more healthy vinegar dressing or something. Stay away from the Thousand Islands and the ranches and all that other shit. It's freaking crap. Every last bit of it. Don't give them the satisfaction of smirking as you gullibly ingest their poisons, ladies and gentlemen. They love your sucker crap. Smoke pipe. All right, guys. Big wheels come on turning. Carry me home to smack you. Singing songs about the Southland. I'm a South
Greetings, Renegade listener. Have you been enjoying the show? Well, then why don't you share it with your friends and family? Click on the show page and then find the social media links right under the description. Or send out a message to an email list. Get the word out however you can. Don't be afraid of letting other people know that you listen to Renegade Broadcasting. You'd be surprised how many of them agree with what we're saying here. With your help, we'll be destroying the mass media's narrative in no time at all. Let's wake up the world, one share at a time.
What's your name?
Billy.
Wee, I like that name. Have you been a good little boy?
Yes. Yes.
How old are you, Billy?
I'm 26. I'm an entertainment lawyer in Beverly Hills.
What I'm wearing, Billy.
Wearing out the things that nobody.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Hey guys, welcome back. Anyway, over the last century and a half, there's been many, many musicians who have expressed their strong preference for the A 432 reference pitch, but their pleas have fallen on deaf ears. Just like, you know, there's been, there was one group of 500 dentists that signed a petition nationwide calling for the removal of fluoride from toothpaste because they recognize that not only does it not prevent tooth decay, it actually contributes thereto and, in fact, is extremely unhealthy to the brain. And yet, their pleas have also fallen on deaf ears. Anything that's detrimental, unhealthy, downright, damnably destructive gets approval. Anything that's beneficial gets brushed away. Oh, you gotta love this world that we live in. This tuning, A equals 432, was unanimously approved at the Congress of Italian Musicians in 1881 and was recommended by the physicists Joseph Savour and Felix Savart, as well as by the Italian scientist Bartolomeo Grassi Landi. But yet, here we are at, you know, at the 440 setting instead of 432. It's been long known that sound can have, again, either a positive or negative effect on the human body, the nervous system, as well as the mind. A equals 440 hertz frequency music has a negative effect, conflicting with energy centers from the heart to the base of the spine. Alternatively, areas above the heart are stimulated. Theoretically, the vibration stimulates ego and left brain function, suppressing the heart-mind intuition and creative inspiration. Imagine that. They don't want people to have intuition or creative inspiration, and they want to disrupt the heart-mind relationship. Yeah. Could one of the reasons, obviously diet is a major factor, but could another factor possibly be the disruptions caused by the A440 frequency setting? Could that, in conjunction with all the other crap that they're feeding us, literally and figuratively, could that also be a cause of the lack of intuition in society, the lack of downright frickin' common sense? And the lack of, you know, creativeness. Interestingly, the difference between 440 and 741 hertz is known in musicology as the devil's interval. Excuse me. For maximum suppression of human consciousness, the frequencies we naturally resonate with, and which are the most biologically and psycho-spiritually enhancing, must be maximally suppressed. Apparently, the ancients were aware of this issue. Ancient Egyptian and Greek instruments, for example, have reportedly been found to be tuned to 432 hertz. As far as many guitarists are concerned, A432 hertz seems to be the most practical, optimal, and most bio-friendly resonant tuning that we have, although many musicians have also favored A444, which belongs to a different scale where C equals 528 hertz. But there's more. The cochlea, again, the part of the inner ear that, you know, converts acoustic impulses into electrical signals so that we can hear in our brains, has a seashell-like spiral shape, as I said the other day. A bilateral cross-section of the cochlea is mathematically describable through the Fibonacci series, the golden ratio, phi, etc., you know, as manifested in nature. According to Chaz Stoddard, in his work, A Short History of Timing and Temperament, this fractality slash recursiveness allows octaves to be decoded at the same point in each layer of the spiral of the cochlea, and may therefore be why we can discern octaves, meaning that without this cochlea design, we would just hear pitch rising or lowering, but would not be able to recognize, for example, that 256 hertz is C, or that 512 hertz is also C, you know, another octave. The octave concept would be almost meaningless and undetectable to us. Somehow, Austrian visionary Rudolf Steiner was on to all of this. He stated, quote, "Music based on C equals 128 hertz, C note in concert, A equaling 432 hertz, will support humanity on its way towards spiritual freedom," he said. "The inner ear of the human being is built on C equals 128 hertz, which comes out to A 432, which is how it used to be, but not anymore. So again, guys, the cochlea seems to be built for A32, which is why A32 is so soothing, it's so harmonious. It's kind of like, you know, in visual art, in paintings, drawings, only the best artworks employ the Fibonacci or the golden ratio sequence, you know, when painting a human face or drawing a human face, for example. Only when it's in that proper 1.618:1 ratio does the artwork look, you know, perfect, aesthetic. When it's out of that ratio, it's offset, it's unsettling, you know, to the eye. It's viewed as, you know, being done by a very poor artist, very badly skilled artist. So it is with music. The A32 frequency, our ears are designed for it. These bastards know this, which is why they set it to A44. A432 is bio-neutral at worst and is widely considered bio-energetically enhancing or even healing. Meditation music at 432 hertz is certainly relaxing, if nothing more. As it turns out, and you know, it's just like this blue light filter I mentioned. You know, I have an app on my Kindle for it. It makes a hell of a big difference. It's much more easy on the eyes, especially at night. It's more relaxing. They claim that this blue light that's filtered out actually excites your nervous system and can keep you awake, having pretty much the same effect as caffeine. As it turns out, C528 hertz rather than 512 hertz may be even more beneficial to humans, as it has been widely associated with DNA activation and repair, as well as being conducive to positive emotional expressions and functions such as compassion, empathy, and intuition. Ah, imagine that. Let's see now, how can we fuck people up so they're not compassionate, empathetic, or intuitive? Oh yeah, we'll just change the... Oh, they're hitting us from every angle, aren't they? Maria Reynolds, in her book Intervals, Scales, Tones, and the Concert Pitch C equals 128 hertz, claims conclusive evidence that A equals 440 hertz tuning, quote, disassociates the connection of consciousness to the body and creates antisocial conditions in humanity. Imagine that. So the tuning they now use, A equals 440 hertz, is causing all kinds of disruptions. Disassociates the connection of consciousness to the body and creates antisocial conditions in humanity. What do you know about that? According to researcher Brian T. Collins, and so guys, when you add that together with, you know, the heavy drum beat and lyrics that inspire violence, well, there you go. And, you know, when you put your kid in front of the boob tube so they're watching sleazy frickin' videos that go along with the music, the videos are also designed to instill those same negative effects. Not just in the filth that they show in the video, but the color schemes that they choose are also designed to disrupt normal brain function and excite the nervous system in a negative way. Jesus Christ, man. With this kind of constant bombardment, our kids today don't stand a goddamn chance. Pumping them with toxic food, toxic drinks, toxic air they breathe. Look at this. Toxic music, toxic videos, toxic movies, toxic goddamn video games. Oh, do they ever know what they're doing? And is it ever, unfortunately, working all too well? According to researcher Brian T. Collins, who strongly endorses Reynolds' book, A equals 440 hertz tuning actually diminishes perception of tone and resonant harmony. Many people appear to endorse the view that while A440 music is more exciting or aggressive for some, it is more mind-oriented and disconnected from the human feeling centers, as well as from the heart, which of course has by far the biggest EM field of all bodily organs, including the brain. You know, could this be why the modern generation likes rap music so much, when anybody with half a functioning neuron between their ears can clearly see that that is not music? It's not. Call it what you want. It is not music. But, you know, their perception of harmony is all frigged up from the A440 tuning. So it appears that the push for this aberrant tuning is designed to disconnect the heart from the brain and to disconnect us from our innate wisdom and compassion as sentient beings. Well, apparently it's pretty effective, isn't it? Let's look at the curious case of the number 432, which, again, is supposed to be, used to be, the original tuning setting for music. The diameter of the sun, 864,000 miles, is 432 times 2, you know, to get the 864 anyway. Very interesting. So, you know, 432,000 times 2. But there's your number 432. Interestingly, 8 plus 6 plus 4, the diameter of the sun, equals 18, or 1 plus 8, which equals 9, the number of completion. The diameter of the moon, 2160 miles in diameter, is 5 times 432. Imagine that. So we see the number 432 both in the sun's diameter and in the moon's diameter. You think this is all coincidence? Pretty amazing coincidence. 2 plus 1 plus 6 plus 0, the numbers of the moon's diameter, also equal 9. As does 4 plus 3 plus 2 in the number 432. It all comes up 9. Again, you could say it's coincidence, maybe, but it's pretty fascinating coincidence, isn't it? I got some shows coming up in the coming weeks on numbers in the occult world. Very interesting how they pop up over and over again. And when I do those shows, a whole series on different occultic numbers, I might repeat a show I did years ago on just bizarre mathematical coincidences, more bizarre than the ones I've been talking about now. Yeah, I'll have to repeat that. Actually, and I might also do another show I did a long time ago on reoccurring numbers in the solar system. Obvious, undeniable mathematical relationships between the orbits of the planets, their satellites. Absolutely fascinating. You know, like, for example, you know, the diameter of the Earth's orbit around the sun is, you know, multiplied 2.5 times as the, you know, the same as Mars's orbital diameter, and then cut that in half and you get Venus. So whatever, I'm just using that. Those aren't actual figures. I'm just making those up. But I'm just trying to give you an example of the type of stuff that's in those notes. Very, very strange. I mean, there's relationships between all the planets like this. Earth is related to Jupiter, which is also related to Venus, which is related to, you know, Neptune, which is related to Uranus, and it just on and on it goes. Crazy, crazy stuff. I'll have to repeat that show again sometime, too. That's, oh, I love this stuff. Just mind-blowing. Anyway, the precession of the Earth. Did a show on this a few weeks back. There's actually different reckonings of it. Some say 25,600. It is 25. Yeah, no. I'm thinking of the 2160, which is a division, you know, of that period. 2160 is like, you know, a month of the Earth's precessional year. Remember, I talked about that. But the full year, the time that it takes the Earth's axis to complete its full circular wobble, if you will, is 25,920 years. Anyway, this equals out to 60 times 432 years. 60 times, there's that number again, 432. Isn't it interesting? that the number 432 now pops up in the sun's or diameter, in the moon's diameter, and now in the Earth's precessional year. Very interesting. If we take the numbers of the Earth's precessional year, 25, 9, 20, and add them together, 2 plus 5 plus 9 plus 2 plus 0, this also equals 9 when you take the 18 and add its two component numbers, 1 and 8. It's actually 18, which is 9 times 2. But if you take, geometrically speaking, you know, you take the 1 and the 8 in that 18 and add them, again, it comes up to 9. 9 figures into all the other numbers we've been looking at. 432 squared equals 186,624, which is 1 plus 8 plus 6 plus 6 plus 2 plus 4, which again equals out to 9 when you add the 1 plus 8. Anyway, let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. That adds up to 27. Okay, so you add the 7 and the 2. It still equals 9. Anyway, here's something else more interesting. This number, 186,624, is within 1% of the speed of light, 186,282 miles per second. The component numbers of which add up to 27, which is, of course, 9 times 3. Which is also 186,224. You get the same thing when you add the digits in that number. You get 27, which is 9 times 3. But also, if you add the 2 and the 7, you get 9. 9 is a very unique number in that sense. That's one of the things I'll be looking at when I cover that show with numbers. 9 times 2 is 18, 1 and 8 is 9. 9 times 3 is 27, 2 and 7 is 9. 9 times 4 is 36, 3 and 6 is 9, and on it goes. 45, 4 and 5 is 9. Just like 11 is unique too. 11 times 2 is 22, 11 times 3 is 33. There's your 9-11, ladies and gentlemen. They're two magical occult numbers. The only two numbers that have those bizarre properties. Anyway, we got a caller on the line, another caller. Welcome to the show, caller.
Hey, Charles, it's Kyle. I just wanted to add a few interesting things in here. You're talking about 864,000 as the diameter of the sun, right?
Yeah.
Now, Pythagoras, the Greek philosopher, mystery school guy,
yeah.
His name in Greek adds up in gematria to 864. So you have the 864 there as well.
Oh, wow, no now, kidding.
Yeah. Now, along with some other important words, but I won't get into that. Now, this one's really interesting. The number of seconds in a day, 60 seconds times 60 minutes times 24 hours equals 86,400.
Oh, wow.
So just, multiply that by 10, and you've got the diameter of the sun there.
No kidding. Hey, that's pretty cool.
And, of course, the sun is inherently tied to our system of timing a day. So that is quite fascinating. Thanks for the show, Charles. That's all I wanted to add.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks, man. Great stuff. So, yeah, there you go, guys. I mean, this just keeps going on and on and on. I definitely got to repeat that show now on the numbers in the solar system. It is absolutely mind-blowing. And once again, why the hell is this stuff? Well, we know why, don't we? But isn't it disgusting that this stuff is not taught in the schools? Who cares if it has no practical application? And you know what? Maybe it does. We just haven't thought of it yet. But it doesn't. Does it have to have a practical application? It's freaking fascinating. This is the kind of stuff that would, you know, stimulate a kid's mind and get them to say, wow, and make them want to come back to school the next day so they can learn more stuff. Education doesn't have to be frickin' boring, but it is, isn't it? Oh, I know I was bored shitless years ago. I can imagine all the worse it must be now. Especially when they got them doped up on frickin' Ritalin and Prozac all day long. Oh, Christ, what a monkey rig, frickin' horse-ass system we have. God damn it, get your kids out of the public schools. Please. Anyway, the square root of the speed of light is 431.6, which rounds off, of course, to 432. So there goes that number again. Using 256 hertz as the reference for C, where A equals 432, all occurrences of C are a power of 2. Interestingly, the Schumann resonance, Earth's electromagnetic heartbeat, if you will, existing within the atmosphere between the Earth's surface and our ionosphere, ranges from about 7.83 to 8 hertz on average, very close to and even the same as 23. This isn't terribly surprising if you consider the frequency of Earth's axial rotation. Earth's pitch, or cycles per second in hertz, as it rotates, comes out to, you know, a G note, as we mentioned yesterday, a fourth below the theoretical C that lies 24 octaves below middle C when C equals 256 hertz. So C equaling 256 or A equaling 432 is in tune with the Earth's rotation, which is in tune with the speed of light, which is in tune with the diameter of the sun, which is in tune with the diameter of the moon, which is further in tune with the precession of the equinoxes. Unreal. Or the, you know, the precession of the Earth's rotational axis. Unbelievable, guys. Anyway, that's a lot of harmony, which is exactly what we should expect from a hollow fractal or scaled plasma-based universe. We shouldn't be so surprised. This universe is a far, you know, far more orderly than what most people realize, what most scientists realize. It looks like chaos, but it's not. It's very ordered. It's like the books stacked up on my bedroom floor here. It looks like chaos, but it's very orderly. I know where everything is. Anyway, let's look at some more fascinating correlations. In a groundbreaking research collaboration initiated in the late 1980s, biologist David Deamer and composer Susan Alexander sought to directly ascertain the frequencies emitted by the bases of our DNA. And this came up with some interesting findings.
Buddy come from?
Well, little Jimmy, you see, the Jews print our money out of thin air and loan it back to us with interest, thus enslaving us through their usury.
Well, I never knew Jews were so good with money.
Yes, little Jimmy. That's why the Jews have been kicked out of over 109 places in 79 different countries for doing the same exact thing.
Wow. They certainly know how to parasite.
They sure do. That's why I bank with Shekelstein Credit Union. Shekelstein Credit Union, printing money out of thin air and enslaving the goyim since 1913. Shekelstein Credit Union. They sure know how to parasite.
Hey guys, welcome back into our final segment here. So as I was saying before the break, this team, this biologist and musical composer team, did some direct measuring of the infrared absorption spectra of DNA molecules. These DNA frequencies were then arranged as scales of notes or tones. And subsequently, they were used as the basis for Alexander's musical compositions. She made music based around, the DNA infrared absorption spectra, turning it into a musical composition, following the math of biology, if you will. Music is math, so she just used the math of biology, and she came up with some amazing stuff. The atomic bonds within these base molecules bend, stretch, and rock upon absorbing infrared light, with a specific frequency related to the energy and strength of the bond and the mass of the nucleus of the atom. There's a direct correlation. A tighter, smaller bond from, say, hydrogen will absorb light with a higher number of waves, per centimeter, and a higher note, quote unquote, in the infrared spectrum. A spectrometer was used to ascertain the frequencies of the different bases. Inside this device, infrared light with frequencies ranging from 600 to 300 wave numbers in units of centimeters was passed through each sample, being absorbed at specific frequencies, which the instrument plots as a spectrum. Once the wave number was identified, it was converted to hertz using the following equation: frequency, or hertz, equals velocity, or speed of light, times wave number. So using that formula, that's how they did the conversion. Because this process involved, the process here is somewhat similar to what NASA has done with its instruments on, Pioneer and Voyager, when they picked up readings from, Jupiter's and Saturn's magnetic fields. They did it later, too, with Uranus and Neptune, turning those vibrations into audible tones. They just converted them with a mathematical formula, basically. So that's what they did here with these DNA infrared absorptions. Because this process involves infrared light, not sound, frequencies, huge numbers or megahertz, were obtained, which, if translated directly into hertz, would be far beyond, human hearing, and thus useless for creating a musical composition as intended. So they had to scale it down, but using the right proportions. the right ratio. So recognizing that if they had to have the numbers that they were getting and keep having, decreasing them by octaves at a time until the number fell within, you know, the audible range of sound frequencies for humans, they would end up with the same notes, only at different lower audible octaves. So what they did was very scientific, and they literally turned an inaudible composition into an audible one. Each DNA base yielded 15 to 18 notes, 60 in all. Interestingly, it appears that none of the bases emitted an A sharp. It was the only note of the diatomic scale that was missing. Once this data was collected, it was converted into a human hearing range and programmed into a Yamaha DX7 synthesizer. They needed to use a special electronic keyboard because the tunings that were derived were almost all microtones, or tones smaller than a regular semitone, the smallest interval generally used in Western music. Anyway, this presented Alexander with a formidable challenge regarding creating actual musical compositions, you know, out of these tightly packed clusters of DNA base notes. Nevertheless, he did a pretty good job. At first, there was no seeming organization or order to what she was seeing or hearing. It seemed kind of disappointing at first when experimenting with the 60 different microtonal DNA notes on her synthesizer. But then, after weeks and weeks of experimentation with different sound combinations, a tonal center began to emerge. One pitch in particular seemed to lend meaning and coherency to the challenging microtonal mores, a pitch common to all four bases, which was C sharp. The results were Hz, 550, 543.4, 537.8. Average DNA hertz turning out to be 544.2. C sharp is positioned also exactly in the center of the absorbency rates and shows up as the average. Thus, C sharp seems to act as a balancer for the entire spectrum of frequencies. Interestingly, most gongs, bells, and drums of the non-Western world are tuned to this C-sharp tonal center, as if we are collectively trying to subconsciously be in tune with natural cosmic harmonics, in tune with our own DNA's frequency. Did the ancients know this frequency? And thus, you know, incorporated it into their instruments? Or is it just because it has just a natural soothingness to it, and so it came about without their knowledge? Who knows? Either way, that's how it's worked out. Pretty interesting. When A equals 432 hertz, C sharp is precisely 544 hertz, exactly what emerged as the dominant central organizing DNA base frequency in Alexander and Deamer's research. So our DNA is tuned, if you will, to this, what used to be the standard 432 hertz tuning for the A note. Not anymore. Imagine that, guys. A 432 hertz is the tuning of the cosmic keyboard, if you will, or cosmic pitchfork, as opposed to the A440 crap that's being used today as the standard. Interestingly, this natural tuning frequency corresponds with the Tibetan monk Om chant, which is also the main note of the sitar in classical Indian music, a pitch which these Far Eastern mystics say, quote, comes from nature. How did they know that? We have only discovered, or perhaps rediscovered, this in modern times. And yet this old tradition states that this tuning, quote, comes from nature, the Om chant and so forth, and the pitch of the sitar. Did they know this? Did the ancients know this? I would have to say, yeah, they must have. So there you have it. So the modern 440 tuning for the A note, guys, is yet another one of their ways to frig with us, to screw us up. There's no question that these vibrations, any vibration, you know, affects the human body, either positively or negatively. In this case, guys, this setting, this standard tuning that they use for music, that they're so vehement about maintaining and refusing the many requests that have been made to go back to the original tuning, they're doing it on purpose, obviously. Just like they're poisoning us with the food additives and the crap in the water, on and on it goes. All right, well, with that said and done, let's move on to the same thing going on in the realm of the electromagnetic world, particularly in regards to the visible light spectrum. I mentioned, you know, before about this blue light thing. You can get a blue light filter. If you just search for it on your app store, it'll come up, blue light filter. There's a couple different versions of it. You can put it on your phone, your Kindle or whatever, you know, your Nook, you name it. Or if you have one of those, what do you call them? The iPad type things there. What do they call those damn things? Anyway, for that matter, I think you can even get it on your computer. But I recommend it, especially, you know, if you have like a Kindle device, definitely if you do a lot of reading like I do on the thing, get the filter, guys. As an average person living in our modern high-tech world, chances are you spend a considerable amount of time on a daily basis looking at LED screens on either, you know, your phone, tablet, laptop, desktop, smartwatch, fitness device, you name it. Google Glass, whatever you want to call it. According to the Vision Council, about a third of today's youth spends at least 9 hours a day on digital devices. That's pretty pathetic, isn't it? And it's probably not much better for adults either, especially those who work at a desk all day with a computer in front of them. What kind of an effect is this having on our health? It is having an effect. There's no question about that. What kind of negative effect is this having? Aside from what this activity might be doing to us physiologically, it's taking a definite toll on our eyes. LED screens emit a great deal of blue light, and according to the Vision Council, quote, cumulative and constant exposure to blue light can damage retinal cells. Imagine that. It's not only relaxing to get this blue filter, and more easy on the eyes, but it's more healthy for the eyes. Blue light can be damaging. If you're like me and have trouble, you know, with your eyes to begin with, do everything you can to protect them from this crap. This blue light crap, guys, I'm telling you, just like with the 440 tuning, they're doing this on goddamn purpose. What's more, even the non-harmful portion of blue light sends a signal to our brains that it's daytime, revving up our heart rate and alertness. You can't be settled down to go to sleep if you're reading and absorbing a lot of blue light, which is subconsciously telling your mind that it's not nighttime, it's daytime. And so your system goes into a heightened state. Your body releases endorphins that act like caffeine. Actually, that might be why. Well, no, because I do use a filter. I was thinking that might be why I can't get to sleep. I was reading on my Kindle last night, but actually I started reading after I tossed and turned and couldn't get to sleep. So now there's something else going on. I don't know what the hell it is. It's been going on for weeks now, even before the passing of my mother. So it's not that. I don't know what the, is it age? My sleep seems to be broken up not most, but about half the nights in the week, 3 to 4 nights a week. It's I don't sleep right through the night. You know, 2 or 3 nights I do, but the rest I don't. I wake up and then I either don't go back to sleep or can't get back to sleep for hours. It's very frustrating. Maybe I got to start taking some melatonin or something. Anyway, blue light mimics the sun, basically. So again, if you're lying in bed at night reading from an LED screen, you're not likely to be able to fall asleep very easily. And what do people do for insomnia? Rather than eliminate exposure to blue light, which most people aren't even aware of, they take under or over-the-counter drugs to put themselves out. Not good, ladies and gentlemen. But it gets worse. Exposure to blue light at night has even been linked to cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and obesity, believe it or not, with many different studies that have been done. It's not entirely clear why this is as yet, but it likely has to do with blue light suppressing the secretion of melatonin. There's all sorts of solutions to the blue light problem. The most obvious is just not to look at screens for, you know, 2 or 3 hours before you go to bed. But for some people, the job, depends on it, or it's just a routine that's hard to break. So for the technologically addicted, here's a few tips. Hardware solutions include adhesive screen protectors that filter out blue light. That's one of the things you can do. There's even orange goggles that you can get, which serve the same function. But by far, the easiest step is just to install, that's what it is, the program I'm using. It's called F-Flux. The letter F is in Kermit the Frog here. F.Lux, L-U-X. So if you're looking on your app store, just type in F.Lux, and that'll get you the program that I use. Again, put it on your phone, put it on your Kindle. You'll immediately notice the difference. Your eyes will thank you for it, and probably your brain too. It's actually free for Windows, Mac, and iPhones, iPads. Interestingly, I don't even want to voice this because I don't want to give the bastards any more ideas, but most apps are actually free. I'm really surprised. I really am. Given time, though, they'll frig that up too. But as of late, I was just looking in the App Store the other day for something, and I can't believe how many things are free on there. in this tribal run world of ours. How the hell did that happen? Anyway, there's not yet a version of the of this filter for the Android, but there's plenty of alternatives, such as CF.lumen that you can get for Androids, or just get those glasses, you know, that filter out orange glasses, filter out the blue light. These apps adjust the light from your screen according to the time of day, or else you can customize them in all sorts of ways. In the evening, F-Lux or F.Lux will automatically filter out your screen's blue light to eliminate the staring in the sun effect, if you will. It'll literally calm you down. There's definitely a noticeable difference, as I said, on the eyes. You know, try it out and see for yourself. Anyway, that completes that set of notes. But look what they're doing to us, guys. They've got the music world all frigged up. And, you know, all of our electronic devices are all frigged up as well. Not to mention the radiation, guys, that comes from a lot of these devices, cell phones particularly. I mean, you know, they're so convenient. Who doesn't have them? I got one myself, but my God, you know, try to minimize your use of the damn thing. There have been quite a few brain tumors around the country that have been definitely associated with heavy use of cell phones. And they noticed that, the tumors occur on the side of the head where people most use their phone. You know, people that are right-handed are getting these tumors on the right side of their brain. Anyway, one more show along this line. A listener mentioned Rife, Royal Raymond Rife, the other day in an email, and I'm like, yeah, I should cover that. It ties in, you know, with everything else we've been talking about. This guy was an absolute genius. Born in 1888, died in 1971. He was an American inventor and researcher. He's most known for his invention of a device that he used in cancer and other lethal disease cure researches that he did. A device that was way ahead of its time, and as you might guess, one that caused him to be persecuted by the mainstream medical establishment, who labeled him, predictably, as a quack. He was no such thing. He was what all doctors should be, a relentless, tireless researcher to try to better man's world, better, you know, people's health, not frig it up. Sadly, guys, I don't have any statistics on this, but just from my own observation, I would venture to say that most doctors today don't give a frog's fat ass about your health. They don't give a damn. They're in the business, like so many other people today, simply to make big, fat, juicy, whopping wads of cash, and could care less whether your health goes up or down. It really doesn't matter to them. If they want to make an improvement, it's only to make themselves look good and, you know, to get more patients so they make more money. But they really don't give a shit if you live or die otherwise. They don't care. Very often, guys, all they do is create the illusion of helping you by getting rid of symptoms, but not the cause of the symptoms. Doctors almost never go to the root cause, do they? They just treat symptoms. Got a pain in the ass? I'll give you a pill to take the pain away. I'm not going to examine your ass to try to figure out what's causing the pain. Ah, it's so disgusting, man. What a fraud. What a frickin' bunch of fakery. There are some out there, yes, that do the job that's expected of them. But you got to look high and low to find them nowadays. Anyway, let's have a look at Rife's remarkable yet tragic story. In the 1930s, well, I can see we're going to get cut off here in a couple of minutes, but maybe I won't. I won't leave a cliffhanger here. I'll just stop that right there, and we'll pick up there tomorrow. But very interesting story with this guy. And again, his discoveries tie right in with what we're talking about, the power of vibrations. That's exactly what he used as a cancer cure, had a lot of success with it, and as we'll see tomorrow, boy, did he suffer for it. So freaking disgusting. How many other people like this that we haven't even heard of, maybe? Their discoveries were so suppressed that their very names disappeared into the memory hole and have never even been heard of. Oh, you can bet. It's probably gone on many, many times through the years. There's probably many today that are going through this same thing, I'm sure, who have made great discoveries, are trying to get it out there. You know, look at that one German inventor I mentioned the other day who developed this skin gun, who was taking patients with third-degree burns, took some of their cells, skin cells, you know, from another part of their body, made a solution, put it in this gun. All he did is spray it over the burns, and, you know, in a matter of like 12 hours, I forget how long it was, in a short time, the skin was fully restored without scarring. That is absolutely impossible, unheard of in today's mainstream medical establishment. And yet this guy invented this gun. Oh, geez, it must have been a good 7, 8, maybe 10 years ago. I can't remember how long ago that was when I saw that YouTube video that a listener had sent me. My God, where is this guy? Where is this invention? No more has been heard of it. And unfortunately, probably no more will ever be heard of it. Suck-ass world living. All right, guys. We'll pick up tomorrow. Take care.
Some Renegade replacements.
Replace body lotion with coconut oil. Replace cleaning supplies with vinegar and baking soda. Replace perfume and cologne with essential oils. Replace laundry detergent with borax, washing soda, and Castile soap. Replace packaged food with local produce. Replace pharmaceuticals with herbs. Replace mass media with Renegade Broadcasting and Renegade Tribune. Replace your Zionist occupied government with nationalists.
Enjoy.
The past is gone.